Blog Talk Radio.
Poof. And just like that, it's time for Eerie House Radio. Good evening and welcome. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with...
Hey, Bakley from Weirdness, Really Bad Movie, and Spaceship One, and I'm along with Mr. Anonymous. Will you please sign in?
All my voodoo needles are sharpened. I am ready. It is I, God of the Ghoul, Blair Blair.
He's an Annie Moose.
Moose and Squirrel.
Mooses.
Yeah. Somebody hates mooses to pieces.
Oh,
I thought
man.
It was mooses to pieces. I thought it was Mises.
Yeah, I thought it was Mises, but yeah, I guess
damn
it's Moose would work
too. Blog Talk, damn you.
Well, I can't get into the chat room, so
yeah,
I'm on the outside.
Yeah, regardless, unfortunately. For now.
For 3 weeks now, yeah. I wonder if I can do that.
Don't know. Anywho, it's time for that voodoo that you do and we do. Voodoo? So well.
We do voodoo.
Oh, that guy?
Or you do voodoo.
Charles Nelson Reilly? Love that
nope.
guy.
Well, it's an excellent
he
story.
He was funny.
It was an excellent story in Night Stalker. That one had me on the edge of my chair.
Oh, that was pretty crazy.
I do recall. Yeah.
Yeah, they had to put salt in their mouth and sew their lips shut.
Yeah. Whenever you spy on a cackling lady and she's got your name written in chicken blood, you're in trouble, buddy.
Yeah. Things might not go so well if you're messing with Papa Doc or any other practicers of this sorcerous art.
Well, on the Kolchak episode, it was a 300-pound, 6'5" tall guy who was a zombie. And, you know, Kolchak weighed like 125, you know.
Yeah.
Comparatively, yeah.
You know, so how he toppled the guy, shoved sea salt into his mouth and sewed his lips shut, I'll not know. But
You didn't get finished with that, remember?
He got interrupted?
He got interrupted, yeah, because the guy woke up.
Oh, that's not good.
No more spoiler alerts here. No more alerts.
So
yeah.
What exactly is voodoo? Well, Webster says the meaning of voodoo is a religion that is derived from African polytheism and ancestor worship and is practiced chiefly in Haiti. All right, but I see another site here that says it's also known as Vodoun, V-O-D-O-U-N. And by several other variants, well, variants is not a popular word now, it is a syncretic religion that combines Roman Catholicism and native African religion, particularly from the region of the Dahomey region of West Africa, the modern-day nation of Benin. So there's a little versions of it.
And I don't think we can really deeply go into this because it starts to split hairs on the religious plane. But essentially, you've got some of the dogma of one religion, and then you drop that off with a bunch of people that are just being left alone anyway, because most of the natural inhabitants of Haiti were shipped over, dropped off, and then abandoned. And the dogma of that mixed up with any type of legend they came up with, and it turned
wow,
into
that's exactly,
it, it
that's,
mutated
that's exactly what
into,
happened to me in my first marriage.
Now, Wiki says
wow.
something about how voodoo originally entered the United States via immigrants from Africa and Haiti, such as Marie Laveau,
exactly.
voodoo
yes.
queen of New Orleans.
Yes.
She was a pacifist
mm-hmm.
and known for healing people.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So pretty cool origins to voodoo and used throughout naturally fiction and storytelling to create a spooktacular story. We got three of them tonight.
Having Manta and Moreland as your voodoo expert coming in is just fantastic because, huh? No, I love him.
He's the greatest.
The zombie king? King of the zombies or something like
king
that?
King of the zombies. King of the zombies.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, so good.
Yeah. A lesser-known voodoo flick that I've always enjoyed, and I think Dave and I, a long time ago, prior even to doing old-time radio, we did a show on, what the heck is his name now? Lou something. I Walked with
Grant?
The Zombie. No.
Oh.
He was a producer, director guy.
I Walked with the Zombie.
That is a great flick. Very stylistic. One thing his films, I'll look up his name in a minute. his films had great photography. All of them did. And
I hear the internet cranking. Get those
I am cranking faster. Away. Val Lewton.
Yes.
Val Lewton. That's who it is.
Val Lewton, yes.
I Walked with a Zombie, 1943.
Great.
Zola Bedrine.
Zola Bedrine, yes.
Zola Bedrine. Oh, this is crazy. Oh, wow. Spooky. Oh, so spooky. Wow.
Yep. Mm. Yeah, if you've never seen it, we highly recommend it. And but we got three tales for you tonight from old-time radio.
Well, if you've got three, Dale has two, I have one. Is that how that works?
Something like
tales.
That.
Okay.
Something like that.
Yeah, we got what? Johnny Dollar? Escape.
One for all and all for one. Yeah.
And Macabre, or is it Macabre?
To me it's Macabre. And then they're saying it
macabre.
Wrong as they say Macabre.
No. If E.G. Marshall calls it Macabre, then it's Macabre. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
For another tale. Remember, every night he says, for another tale. Turn to tomorrow for another tale. Into the macabre.
And I always shake my head and go, what's wrong with you? Why did no one correct you? one corrects E.G. Marshall. I guess.
I would.
It would be like correcting Morgan Freeman or James Earl Jones. Those voices you don't mess with, you know?
You do not.
And yet all we've had is fun with those. There are so many funny things that those guys have done with their voices. They would take direction.
maybe, but not from us. Anywho.
Not from us.
Anywho.
Depends on how big your wallet is.
Where shall we begin tonight with our thrilling tale?
Where shall we begin?
Yours truly,
like
Johnny Dollar. How about that one?
Yeah, that's a fun one.
It's a good place to start, Gar. This one's called, unusually, the voodoo matter.
Ooh.
That's so unusual.
How did they come up with that title?
Does it matter?
I think the first two words are chosen, and they have to come up with a third.
The third word is always matter.
Yeah,
well,
the first word is the. You have to figure out what that middle one's going to be.
There you
go. The middle one.
And the middle one is right there with our topic, voodoo, the voodoo matter with Johnny Dollar. Is this the Bill Bailey?
It is Bob Bailey?
Not Bill Bailey.
Bob Bailey, because Bill Bailey went home.
Yes.
But this is with John Lund, maker of movies and radio and some stage as well. We can get into
him. Also on
the
small airline.
Halfway point.
Small airline.
Small airline. It was really small. It was one.
It was.
Jim's Airport. Come fly, Jim's.
Yeah. Come fly with me.
Yeah, let's fly on over to our first episode. The Voodoo Matter is from...
It is an original air date of August 4th, 1953.
Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum, the refreshing, delicious treat that gives you chewing enjoyment, presents for your listening enjoyment, John Lund as...
Johnny Dollar.
Nelson Price, Johnny.
Oh, yes. How are you, Mr. Price?
Fine. Got a job for you. You'll have to go to the West Indies.
The West Indies?
Near Haiti, St. Ledger. A Mr. Claude Sheldon holds a big policy with us. We insure him, his wife, and his farm. They've had a lot of trouble. It's going to cost us a lot of money, and we think an investigation is necessary. Come on down to the office, and I'll give you as much as I've got, Johnny.
The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum bring you John Lund in another adventure of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
For refreshing taste, plus chewing enjoyment, treat yourself to delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. When your mouth and throat feel hot and dry, a stick of Wrigley's Spearmint gives you quick, long-lasting refreshment. The lively, full-bodied Spearmint flavor cools your mouth and freshens your taste. The chewing itself helps keep your throat pleasantly moist. Best of all, you can chew and enjoy refreshing Wrigley's Spearmint Gum almost any time and any place. Keep a package handy right in your purse or pocket so you can chew a stick whenever you want it. For refreshing taste plus chewing enjoyment, treat yourself to delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. Millions enjoy it, and you will too.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Home Office International Insurance and Bonding Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the voodoo matter. Expense account item 1, $206.40, plane fare and incidentals from New York to Port-au-Prince, Haiti, after receiving from you the necessary information concerning the insured, Claude Sheldon. After landing, I checked into the hotel and waited for Claude Sheldon as prearranged. I waited for about an hour. Come in.
Mr. Dollar?
That's right. Mr. Sheldon?
Yes.
I've been expecting it. Claude Sheldon pushed himself away from the door, grabbed a chair and dropped into it, took in long, deep breaths and smiled a very slow, weak smile.
I would have been here sooner, but there's been more trouble.
More trouble, eh? Well, my company told me a little about it, but you better give me your own story.
Certainly. As you know, I am a farmer.
Yeah.
My place is near Saint-Léger. A number of other farms in the vicinity, all doing very well until several months ago. First, it was fires. The cane fields burned. One by one, the cattle became sick. Then some of the farmers grew ill and died.
Can I get you something?
Please. Some water, please.
Have you been to see a doctor?
I'm afraid a doctor can't help.
There you are.
Thank you.
Have you any idea what's wrong with you?
Yes and no. My Christian religion fights it, but my life on Haiti has taught me deep respect for it.
Respect for what, Mr. Sheldon?
Voodoo, Mr. Dollar. Oh, I know just what you're thinking. But a doctor in Haiti has examined me and my wife and the others. He can find nothing wrong.
Voodoo, Mr. Sheldon?
I don't expect you to understand. It's hard for me. Perhaps there is something else. I hope you can find out.
Well, I'm afraid I can't buy the voodoo theory, Mr. Sheldon.
There's one thing. Immediately after my wife and I became ill, I received an offer for my farm. A very low offer from a Saint-Léger banker. I investigated and found it had been made in the interests of one Arthur Cotswold.
Arthur Cotswold?
Haiti's biggest planter. Extremely wealthy.
Even after the sick cattle and the fires and everything?
Yes. That's why I became suspicious. The other farmers received similar offers.
More water?
Perhaps I don't think I... Mr. Dollar.
Mr. Sheldon. I called the hotel desk for a doctor, but by the time he'd gotten Sheldon to the hospital, the patient was dead. The authorities were called in and I was questioned. A preliminary examination was made on the dead man, but the cause of death remained a mystery. So an autopsy was ordered. I told the chief of police to forward the report to me as Saint Leger and left for the Sheldon farm. Expense account item 2, $5 American for a beaten-up taxi to take me 10 miles into the country. A crowd of natives was standing in front of the Sheldon house as we drove up. I didn't know what it was. No one said a word. But something was wrong. I could feel it. I walked through the crowd and up to the house and stopped cold as the door opened.
Who are you?
I'd never seen anything like him. A native who was a good 7 feet tall and must have weighed at least 300.
Me Bimba. Who are you?
I'm Johnny Dollar. I'm an insurance investigator.
You from the United States?
Yeah. I'm supposed to investigate the trouble here.
Me no. Master Sheldon, tell me.
I saw Master Sheldon about an hour ago.
He dead.
How do you know he died?
You come in house.
All right. What are all those people doing out there?
Their friend. Madame, she died too.
Bimba led the way into the bedroom, where Mrs. Sheldon lay on the bed, covered with a fresh white sheet, her eyes closed in death, her face drawn and tired. Bimba told me that she died about an hour before, and a cold chill ran up my back. I remembered her husband lying on the floor of my hotel room about an hour before.
Bad voodoo.
Is that why the cattle are sick and the fields burned?
Oui, bad voodoo.
Mr. Sheldon thought a man named Cotswold might have something to do with it.
Mr. Cotswold, big man, very powerful.
What are those drums?
For madame and master. The voodoo, good voodoo, give blessing for spirit for madame and master.
I see. I want to talk to the police in Saint Leger. Who do I see?
Me take you.
Right then, I inherited Bimba. And if there was going to be any trouble, the giant servant would certainly help to make up for any lack on my part. The first thing I wanted to do was to contact the authorities in Saint Leger. And Bimba told me my man was Inspector Georges. Bimba saddled up 2 horses from the barn, and together we rode back to Saint Leger. Bimba pointed out the inspector's office and waited in front while I went in.
Oui, Monsieur Dollar. The Sheldons were a very fine family. I knew them very well.
How did everybody know they were dead?
On Haiti, things of such nature are never a secret. The natives know.
Voodoo?
Being a stranger to Haiti, Monsieur Dollar, I expect you to be a skeptic.
But you're not?
Let us say I've been in Haiti too long to be one, huh?
You know a man named Cotswold?
I would suggest you forget Monsieur Cotswold.
Why?
Monsieur Cotswold is a very prominent man.
Yes, yeah, so I've heard.
He is the largest plantation owner in the West Indies, a self-made man with a considerable temper.
I'll mention it in my report to my office.
Eh bien, as you wish. But Monsieur Cotswold is looked upon by the people of Saint-Leger with a great deal of respect. It is my opinion that you should avoid him. First, because I am certain he will not be in sympathy with your motives, and second, because the opposition you will encounter will be far-reaching and much too difficult for you to handle.
What if I come up with something incriminating?
Oh, for your sake, I hope you do not.
Oh. What do you do here in Saint-Leger, Inspector?
I am the law, Monsieur Dollar.
But you wouldn't like it if this Cotswold were guilty of breaching that law?
If Monsieur Cotswold has broken the law, it would certainly be my duty to arrest him. But I am not considering the arrest, nor the necessary steps that would have to be taken to prove the guilt. Dangerous steps, Monsieur Dollar. One might trip on those steps.
And break his neck.
For 10 years I have been the law. If tomorrow Cotswold decided it was time for me to relinquish my position, I should probably retire.
So you prefer the middle of the road, eh?
It is much easier to see what is ahead.
You can always get run down from behind.
I do as much as I can to prevent that possibility. No, again, my suggestion that you forget, Monsieur Cotswold.
I left the philosophical inspector and went back to Bimber, still sitting outside on his horse. Every time I looked at him, it was like a little kid spotting the Empire State Building for the first time. He smiled a mouthful of white teeth and leaned over to give me a hand up. He caught me by the wrist and lifted me into my saddle as though he was hoisting a small bundle of laundry.
The inspector. He say forget Mr. Cotswold.
What? Bimber.
Oui, monsieur.
Oh, forget it. What do you think I should do?
Me think you do what you want.
And you know what I want.
Oui. You want go see Mr. Cotswold.
The inspector says I shouldn't.
You go anyway.
You think it's a mistake?
If you're afraid. But you're not. You're not strong like Bimber, but you're a good fighter.
I don't like to fight, Bimber.
Bimber know that. We go see Mr. Cotswold.
We swung our horses around and Bimber led the way up a long, narrow road, surrounded on both sides by sugarcane fields. Somewhere, from not too far away, I heard the drums start again. Bimber straightened in his saddle and looked off to the north. He began moving his shoulders, slowly keeping time to the steady rhythm of the drums. Then he began to sing softly. What does that mean, Bimber?
It means in your language, it is our Papa who passes.
Papa?
Papa Dambala, the great source.
Voodoo.
Oui. I later must leave you. Today, Wednesday, is the day of Papa Dambala.
He turned back to the north and continued his little chant until we reached the beginning of a long, high fence running along next to the narrow road. Bimber leaned down and swung open a big gate. Then we rode up the path and led through the Cotswold property until we reached the house. Sitting back between two huge trees was the Cotswold mansion. Bimber stayed on his horse and I climbed down and walked to the front door.
Mr. Dalla, watch out for Mr. Jocelyn. He guards Mr. Cotswold.
Thanks.
What do you want?
I'd like to see Mr. Cotswold.
You do, huh? What are you doing here, Bimber?
I wait for Monsieur.
Found himself a new governor, huh? You must be that dollar fella.
I must be.
Well, come in. Mr. Cotswold's been expecting you.
Jocelyn wasn't a very small man himself. Looked as though he was capable of handling just about any situation that might come up. He led the way into a large paneled study, and I met Arthur Cotswold. The drums had stopped.
I know why you're here, Mr. Dollar.
Well, then that should make it a lot easier for both of us.
For some reason, the farmers are suspicious. Their fear is divided between me and Voodoo. Sheldon convinced some that I might be responsible.
And of course you're not.
Of course.
Sheldon thought you might want to get control of the other farms in Saint-Léger.
I simply tried to help them. With their cattle sick and their crops gone, I had my banker make them an offer.
What would you want with sick cattle?
I could use the land.
Do you think the cattle will get better and the crops won't fail if you control the land?
I intend to do away with the sick cattle. I have no use for the crops.
Have any of your cattle been affected?
None.
That's pretty strange.
Haiti is a strange land. And on this point, I would most certainly give you advice. Go home, Mr. Dollar. Leave well enough alone.
Well enough is pretty bad, the way I see it, Mr. Cotswold. And I'll leave after I've gotten a few answers.
Mr. Dollar, I am not a patient man. I've gone out of my way to give you some healthy advice. Heed it, for your sake.
I won't forget it for a minute.
You persist in this investigation?
I get paid to persist, Mr. Cotswold.
Friends, you know Wrigley's Spearmint Gum is a delicious treat that millions enjoy all year round. It's good to chew almost any time and any place. In warm weather, you'll enjoy especially the refreshment that Wrigley's Spearmint Gum gives you. When your mouth feels hot and dry, or when you're feeling warm and tired, chewing Wrigley's Spearmint gives you a pleasant little lift. It cools your mouth, moistens your throat, and refreshes your taste. Besides, chewing on a good, smooth piece of Wrigley's Spearmint Gum seems to add enjoyment to whatever else you're doing. So enjoy it at home, at work, wherever you are. And remember, Wrigley's Spearmint Gum is a swell treat to take along on picnics. Get plenty for everybody. That's Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. Healthful, refreshing, delicious.
I'm sure we've all heard by now that we're down to one monkey. Michael Nesmith passed on. And speaking of the monkeys, I remember... Do you guys remember the gum cards? We used to call them bubble gum cards. I guess
yes.
They call them trading cards now. And they were banana flavored from the monkey's
cards.
Yeah, the monkey's cards.
Were...
No, the gum.
Meaning
that
you licked the cards?
No, the gum that came with it was banana flavored, you.
Uh-huh. Well, they were put out by Topps, T-O-P-P-S.
Yes.
And I have the, of course, the 1966 Batman. I've got those, and I do remember the monkeys.
I don't think they had bat-flavored gum, though.
They did. It wasn't that popular with the kids, you know. You go, you lick that, and it tastes like a bat.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not.
I personally don't see anything wrong with that, but what do I know?
Well, there you go. Yeah, well. We all have different tastes, don't we?
Yes.
So
a bat flavored gum, that might be good.
That yeah.
Can you get rabies from bat flavored gum?
I don't know. There's one way to find out. Who could we get to test it?
Hey Mikey.
He'll try anything.
He'll try anything. There's supposedly some coffee. Is it a coffee where they feed the beans to bats and then it passes through their digestive system and makes it taste better? I don't know. That's like bleh.
There's a joke fumbling around in there that I don't want to touch.
No, there's a reality. There's some coffee bean where they pass it through the digestion system.
I thought it was through a goat.
A goat?
Goat.
Yeah, I'm still. I'm sorry. They are not selling any coffee to me. I'm gonna pass.
Battered goat. I'm not buying that coffee. Yeah.
Yeah. Either. No.
Give me some good old chock full of nuts, man.
That's what I get. Yeah, that's what I've got. Good old
Boris
chock
Karloff
full of nuts.
Butternut coffee is better.
Butternut. Oh, Karloff. Yeah. I just played a commercial with him last week, I think.
Doing butternut coffee, I would imagine.
Doing butternut coffee, and
yep.
And it was Gar reading the lines to him, and it was funny. We made an echo in there. It was a lot of fun. Because they push the commercial like you're supposed to read it, and they have the words. So
yes, he's like responding to the
right.
So
that was kind of fun.
We want to welcome Fogsbane to the chat.
Hi, Fogs. Sorry I can't see you.
Just say no to gum. At least bat-flavored gum, I would imagine.
Just say no to gum, yeah. Boy. So, little ins and outs on Voodoo here on Johnny Dollar, eh?
Yes. Interesting story. You know, Johnny Dollar didn't do a lot of international traveling once he hit 1955. But before that, he was all over the world.
So
it was global, man.
Was it budgetary conflicts or restraints? Because, I mean, it's radio. It's a script. He could go anywhere.
Yeah,
Donnie
not
Dollar
that they had to
the
go
moon.
On location necessarily, but, yeah.
Well, put it this way. There's enough trouble in the good old U.S. of A.
Oh, yeah, for Johnny
to
investigate.
He didn't need to
absolutely.
Go all over the world for that, yeah. You don't need
well,
to go and
I
find
really,
Germany to find problem.
I really wanted Johnny Dollar on the moon. You know, Johnny Dollar visits Mars. And I'm there. Sure. Why not?
Sure. Johnny Dollar
sure.
visits the seventh planet. Hey.
Journey to the seventh planet. That's actually a theme song for horror movie. So
yes.
bad.
You do know which one the seventh planet is, don't you?
It's not.
It's the one they forced us to rename because it sounds silly.
Because
it
sounds like
people,
a body part?
Yes.
They renamed it?
Yeah, you're supposed to pronounce it Uranus now.
Yeah.
You're supposed to pronounce it Uranus.
Oh,
I thought they renamed it the Dark Hole, and that was it. No?
That's terrible. Go to your room, young man.
Oh,
that'll be enough.
Oh,
jeez. That's damn funny. Anyhow.
well, thank you. Blah, blah. That's why you pay me the big bucks.
That's right. I was thinking of doubling your salary.
Now I'm convinced. He gets the oversized money? I thought we were saving that for like a party.
Oh, yeah.
There's a party?
Well, you know, we got a second. Now there's things
now?
To keep the big star.
There is it now. You got all the money, so where is it now?
Yeah. Well, there goes our radio trip to Mars. You know,
there goes our company picnic. Thanks, Gar.
That too. Yeah.
Things you got to do to keep the big stars happy, huh? Jeez. I'm telling you.
What? Man. Memory problem.
Anyway.
Memories.
We probably ought to make big finish for Voodoo Matter from Johnny Dollar.
Yes.
Yep, better do that.
From
yep.
way back
press
in 1953.
And now with our star, John Lund, we bring you the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours Truly.
I left Arthur Cotswold, picked up Bimba, and he led me back to town. On the way, I got an idea. When we arrived in town, I sent Bimba back to the Sheldon farm. Then I went in to talk to Inspector Georges. The inspector had received a wire from the authorities in Port-au-Prince concerning the autopsy on Sheldon.
I had no idea the authorities in Port-au-Prince were interested in this affair.
May I see that?
Oh, Mr. Peniman.
Wow. Here's something pretty interesting, Inspector. Mr. Sheldon died of a disease known as brucellosis, commonly known in cattle as Bang's disease.
I read the account.
Ever heard of brucellosis, Inspector?
I'm not a medical man, Monsieur Dollar.
Undulant fever. Sheldon and his wife probably caught it from their sick cattle.
Well, yeah, then you have solved the mystery.
No, not quite. I want to find out why all the cattle belonging to the small farmers got sick and not the ones belonging to Mr. Cotswold.
What do you intend to do?
I think those cattle were infected and the cane fields burned deliberately. If the cattle were infected, there might be some of the brucellosis still around, and I'm going to find it. And I think you'd better issue a search warrant and come with me.
Ah, no, Monsieur Dollar. The middle of the road, remember?
I think you'd better start modifying your policy, Inspector. Unless you want me to get in touch with Port-au-Prince and ask that you be held as a material witness in a murder case.
I will issue the warrant.
I kind of thought you would.
I will issue it, but you certainly don't think it will be able enough to get you into that house.
No, but it'll make it legal. I sent Bimba back to collect some of his friends. They're going to help us get into that house, Inspector.
Oh, I will take no part in violence.
They won't even be with us. It'll be easy to search the Cotswold place if Cotswold was out fighting a fire.
A fire?
Oh, just a harmless fire. But far enough away so that Cotswold will think it's his cane fields.
Oh.
Well, I don't agree with such methods, Monsieur Dollar, but as long as it's a harmless fire, I will issue the warrant.
Well, welcome back to the gutter, Inspector. The view isn't much, but you can't miss where you're going. When we reached the Sheldon farm, we saw a crowd of natives standing out in front. Again, something was wrong. We piled out, pushed our way through the crowd, and inside the house, we found what it was. Lying in the middle of the room was Bimba. He was almost dead when I knelt beside him.
I talked to friend. They light fire for you.
Thanks.
Now I go to Baron Samter. Dambalo way to take me.
You're in step?
Yeah. Got him from behind. Never would have faced him.
You stay. You see, wait till Lena Tete your mort.
See what? It's a ritual. It means taking the spirit from the head of the dead. He wants you to see it.
You stay. You believe voodoo.
All right, Bimba. I'll stay.
You see. Believe.
Bimba.
No. He is dead.
The next few hours I'll never forget. The natives came into the house and placed Bimba on a bench. Then the ceremony began. They carried live pigeons, olive oil, 30 pieces of fat pine wood, a pair of chickens, and some coarse cornmeal. They covered Bimba's body with a saddle blanket, killed the chickens, roasted the cornmeal, and put it in a large white plate. The pine wood slivers were lighted and held like candles. Then a man they called Doné took the white plate in one hand and the pot with the chicken in the other and approached the fire, chanting a strange dirge. Then as Doné finished the last line of the chant, the body of Bimba sat straight up with straining eyes, bowed its head, and fell back. The inspector and I drove over to Cotswold's house and waited while the moon climbed up over the clouds and the drums in the distance tangled my nerves into knots. After an hour of waiting, a dull glow to the south started the expected commotion in the Cotswold household, and we climbed out of the car.
Fire, Mr. Cotswold! The cannon for you!
Get the servants! Get every man out there to fight that fire! Hey!
It worked.
Yeah. Give them a few minutes, and we'll go into the house.
Now.
The inspector and I took the Cotswold house apart like a well-trained wrecking crew and came up with exactly nothing.
Well, Monsieur Dallal.
Isn't there a barn out back?
Oui.
Then let's go. The drums were louder now and the dull glow of the fire had nearly vanished. The inspector took one end of the barn and I took the other. We worked toward each other. And just about the time I was ready to give the whole thing up...
Monsieur Dallal.
You find something?
This.
Huh. A hypodermic for cattle. That's not enough.
And this? I found it under that box.
A bottle. Might not be anything.
Ah, but we could take it back to town and have it analyzed.
Well, that's about all we can do. This is the only thing we've got. Let's go.
I'm afraid not. Stand right where you are.
Hello, Mr. Cotswold. You know the inspector, don't you?
For a number of years. I must say I didn't expect this of him.
I have a search warrant, Monsieur Cotswold.
How very interesting. See if they have any weapons, Johnson.
Right.
I assure you we are well within our rights. This warrant is...
Shut up and raise your hands.
Better do as he says.
A commendable suggestion, Mr. Dollar. But I'm afraid you've learned prudence a little too late.
I never argue with a gun.
They both got guns, Mr. Cotswold.
You're making a serious mistake.
I'm afraid the mistake is yours and Mr. Dollar's, Inspector. Get the bottle and the hypodermic.
Yes, sir.
Is that the stuff you've been infecting the cattle with?
It is. You see, you really should have taken my advice and returned to the States. And I'm surprised at you, Inspector. I really thought you were more sensible.
Sometimes a man finds his pride and does the best thing.
And this is the best thing.
Perhaps it sounds foolish, but I think it is.
You know, of course, that I cannot allow either of you to live.
Tell me something. Who killed Bimber?
I think Jocelyn can answer that. But enough conversation. I'll leave the details in your hands.
Yes, sir.
Goodbye, gentlemen.
All right, start walking.
Jocelyn, you won't...
Shut up. Now do what I tell you and start walking.
The drums have stopped.
Just keep moving right out the gate.
What about the drums? What does it mean?
I don't know.
Mr. Cotswold! All right, both of you, start running for that house. Go on.
We ran into the house with Jocelyn right behind us. He ordered us to go ahead of him and into the dark study. And that's where we found Cotswold, stretched out on the floor, his dead eyes staring up at us, his mouth open in a soundless scream. His neck had been broken.
Ah, mon Dieu. Who's here?
Monsieur Dollard.
Who is it? Who's in this room? No! No! Get away! Get away from me! You're dead!
You won't believe it, and to this day I'm still not sure. But there in the darkness was a huge man, and he looked exactly like Bimba. Jocelyn shot him 6 times, and he kept right on coming. Then he grabbed Jocelyn and crushed him like an eggshell. By the time we'd collected our wits, the giant had disappeared through the door and into the night.
Monsieur Dollard.
I think I'll sit down.
Was it Bimba?
I don't know. I don't want to know anything. I just want to get on the first plane back to the States and relax for a week in a tub of hot mud. There it is. It certainly looked like Bimba. If you're inclined to believe in voodoo, perhaps it was. I talked to some of the natives before I left, and it didn't seem unusual to them. Cotswold was a bad man, and Bimba had come back from the dead to avenge his people. I know it sounds crazy, but I'm telling it to you just the way I saw it. Or am I? Well, anyway, it's the inspector's problem. Expense account items 3 and 4, $250. Hotel bill, plane fare, and incidentals back to Hartford. Expense account total, $461.40. If you want any more information, you can contact me at the Greenbrier Rest Home. I'll be the third mud pie from the left. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, friends, for refreshing taste plus chewing enjoyment, treat yourself to delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. The taste of fresh spearmint is cooling and delightful, and there's lots of it in every stick of Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. It freshens your mouth, helps keep your throat moist, and sweetens your breath besides. You'll enjoy the good chewing, too, because Wrigley's Spearmint is so smooth and pleasant to chew on. There's nothing else quite like it. Next time you're at the store, stop at your friendly merchant's display of chewing gum and get a few packages of good-tasting Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. Always keep some handy for refreshing taste plus chewing enjoyment. That's Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Healthful, refreshing, delicious. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, brought to you by Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum, stars John Lund in the title role and was written by Blake Edwards with music by Eddie Dunstetter. Featured in today's cast were Tudor Owen, Parley Bear, Roy Glenn, Ben Wright, Bill Conrad, and Jester Hairston. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is produced and directed by Jaime Del Valle. The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum hope you enjoyed tonight's story of Johnny Dollar and that you're enjoying delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Gum every day. This is Charles Lyon inviting you to join us again next week at this same time when, from Hollywood, John Lund returns as...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
I did not know Bob Conrad was in that. I thought I recognized his voice. There's something else you didn't know. Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story. It's like a silent movie.
Take off the mute.
Okay, Toddy. Here we go. One more time.
You mean one more time? You get one intro. That's it.
Oh, okay. When you try to bargain with a zombie, first you have to find the correct change. There we go.
There you go.
Two times for me, one time for you. I was sitting there pontificating with the mute button on.
Yep. Thought we were keeping you awake or something.
Yeah.
It happens to the best of us. The best of us. And also the rest of us.
Happens to me every day. I don't know.
What other classic voodoo movies are there? There was one. Oh, what the heck was it? Is it The Wicker Man? That's kind of voodoo related. No. Yeah.
I don't know. Voodoo related. Oh, that's a good one.
Anyone in the chat may have Fogbane got any good classic voodoo movies that you recall?
Mine just always goes back to Mantan.
Yeah.
That one.
And there's that other one that takes place in Asia. What is that one? Another public domain zombie movie, Dave.
From China? Or
no,
Japan,
it takes place in, like, I don't know, Cambodia or something.
Oh.
Oh, come on. It's a 40s.
I'm not sure. There's White Zombie that Carl
no,
did do.
Yeah, that's...
That's not the one. That's the huge... Revolt of the Zombies.
That's the one. That's the one I'm thinking of. Revolt.
Revolt of the Zombies?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I believe it takes place in Cambodia.
Yeah, in Cambodia, yes.
I remember this odd thing. It's not zombies, but I'm confused and I'm not sure. But I'm pretty sure it's not. But it's set in, I believe, China. And the thing about vampires in the lore is that they cannot walk. They have to hop like a bunny. So they put their hands up, you know, in front, and they hop. And they can't cross water. But the only way that they can chase you is hopping like a bunny. It's very weird.
I'm not too scared of that. It's like running away from the American mummy, you know. At the speed he was going, not a real threat.
Yeah,
right.
Not a problem. Unless
it happens and you're in a Johnny Quest cartoon and they've got that music.
Yes.
Thump.
Yeah,
thump.
You can't.
Yeah, I love that.
You can't run when that music's going.
No.
It's like running in water.
Yeah, you're stupefied.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was Bela Lugosi in Voodoo Man in 1944.
Ooh.
And then there was Voodoo Woman in 1957.
Yep.
But was there ever Voodoo Chimpanzee? I think they missed
out.
Was it?
There's Karloff and Voodoo. Karloff and Voodoo Island.
I think that's Bonzo Goes to Haiti with Ronald Reagan was in that one.
Oh, there's a John Carradine
Bonzo
film.
Goes to Haiti.
There was a John Carradine film. It was in like 1972 or 3 or something like that. And it was German soldiers that were zombies. and these people are on a joy ride on a boat, and something happens to the boat, and they end up on this island, and okay, John Carradine was the an elder. John Carradine was the ship captain, and he was gone really quick. But the guy that was on the island was from the Hammer films. The he was the Van Helsing in the Hammer films.
Cushing.
Him. Peter Cushing was on this island, and they had German zombies. They were Nazis, and they were zombies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
What the heck was that one? I don't know.
Yeah. But that one freaked me out. I saw it. They made it for TV, so they cut out parts of it. But I saw it when I was a little kid, and scared the heck out of me.
How about From Hell It Came? There might be a little voodoo there where you're walking tree monster Tabanga. It was island cultural stuff, maybe. I don't know.
But someone would have to have a Chubunga monster zombie doll to make him move. I don't know. Right? No?
I don't know.
Maybe?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
All I know is Lucy and Ramona and Sunset Sam.
That too. Never did know about Sunset Sam, but, boy, that guy could skate.
He had a build, too.
He did. He was like a bodybuilder. Bodybuilder, roller skater guy.
He had to build what? What did he have to build?
Yeah, I don't know. Looked a little bit like Hulk Hogan, but I digress. Two more.
Oh.
Head or Tails of Zombies.
Well,
not zombies, but voodoo for sure. How about we get on over to Macabre?
Macabre. Macabre.
Okay.
Macrame.
Macrame, that's it. It's a story
that
of macrame.
It. Yeah. Who doesn't like macrame?
Gar called me before
only.
The broadcast saying, I could only find like 6 or 8 programs. How many were there made? And I found this article from Stars and Stripes. Of course, this was done out of the military, did it for love, and that's all the budget they had to use, yeah. Anyways, this best program to begin. This is out of Tokyo, Stars and Stripes. Thrills and Chills are in store for Far East Network listeners Monday at 9:30 p.m. when Macabre, a new series of suspense and horror tales makes its debut. The series will run for 8 weeks. Some of the tales have been written and produced by William Verdier, Fenn Assistant Production Director, while Senden Fenn Production Director wrote one story. They're definitely not recommended for children, said Verdier. They are no holds barred, and when people get killed, you will hear it happen. Wow.
And it makes it all the worthwhile, I think.
I know.
You can't hear them getting killed. What's the point?
Oh, so much fun.
Verdier had been associated with production of acted in Ellery Queen in her Sanctum suspense series on the NBC network. Macabre will be distributed on a worldwide basis through the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service out of Los Angeles, California. And we have one here tonight.
Yes. And this one's called The House in the Garden. And what is the broadcast date of this episode of Macarena?
And I can't pull it up. December 4, 1961.
We'll be back.
Man lives in a world of time and space. He lives in a spectrum of the universe. When he ventures beyond this limit, he is in the unknown, a realm where strange forces are brought into play. When man attempts to misuse these forces, he is sometimes destroyed. This is Macabre.
Far East Network presents, in special performance, Macabre. Tonight's story, The House in the Garden.
Our story concerns a medieval castle in the south of France and the strange events that befell its inhabitants. About the turn of the century, its owner, Count Jacques de Marigny, died. His son and heir, an American art dealer, moved to France to become the master of his father's estate. One rain-swept night, a few years later, a black-caped figure strained against the storm toward a towering gray structure looming defiantly above the barren countryside. It raced across a drawbridge into the courtyard like some giant bat closing in on its victim. A moment later, the figure pounded wildly on the massive main entrance of the ancient castle and was admitted by a small, hunched servant who led the visitor into the library before a roaring fire. The man stood, patiently drying himself. Presently, he noticed the gaunt features of something else watching him from a darkened portal. For a moment, the two were motionless. Then the visitor took a step forward and asked,
"Good evening, monsieur. I am Inspector Bordeaux of the Prefecture of Police. I am here in answer to the urgent summons of Count Jacques de Marigny. Perhaps you'll be kind enough to inform him that I am here. Speak up, man. You cannot stand there in the shadows all evening." "Good. That is better. Step over here by the fire, please. Good Lord, man. You have the look of death. What is the matter? Take me to your master at once. Where is Count?"
"I am the Count Dumartini."
"You?"
"Thank God you've come, Inspector."
"Inspector Bordeaux at your disposal, sir. Now, will you explain these rather strange circumstances?"
"Yes, in a moment. Monto?"
"Did you call master?"
Two glasses of brandy."
"Brandy, sir?"
"Yes, brandy."
"Brandy is in the cellar, sir."
"Cellar? Well, the wine from the kitchen will do."
"Wine from the kitchen. Thank you, sir. Wine from the kitchen."
"Your servant is frightened, monsieur."
"Please be seated by the fire, Inspector. You're drenched."
"Thank you very much. A terrible night, yes. The carriage hardly made the trip up the mountain road. But with the horses barking at the lightning, I did not expect to arrive at all."
"My apologies for summoning you on such a night."
"In so isolated a spot, a patient could die before a doctor could possibly reach him."
"The wine, master."
"Thank you, Monto. That will be all."
"A moment, if you please. Although the wine is fine, the brandy would have been better. Why did you not go to the cellar for it?"
"Go to the cellar?"
"That will be all, Monto. You may help in the kitchen tonight."
"Yes, master. Thank you, master."
"What is wrong here, monsieur? What about this cellar he seems to be afraid of?"
"It's a long story, Inspector, beginning with the house in the garden."
"The house in the garden?"
"Yes."
Continue, please."
"I sent for you because our lives here at the castle are in danger."
"Oh? Who threatens you?"
"I am not certain."
"Have you received notes or visitors who might lead you to believe that someone wants to kill you?"
"No. Why? Suppose I'm not making much sense."
I must agree, monsieur. You are not."
"Will you hear me out?"
"My dear Count, I am a busy man. Perhaps you should have called a doctor instead. No?"
"There may be a death here tonight. If you will but listen, I can explain."
"Very well. At any rate, that wine was tasty."
"Oh, my glass. I haven't touched it."
"Perhaps only a sip or two. I am not a drinking man, you know."
"Of course not. I'll have Monto bring us a bottle."
Very good. Now, tell me about the house in the garden."
"A little over 10 years ago, my father died. He left me this estate of over 1,000,000 francs. Provision was that I must occupy the castle and remain here to retain title. I lived in America since childhood, since my mother left my father when I was an infant. It was difficult, but I pulled up stakes and moved to France. And then I met an American student in Paris, Yvette Palmer. We fell in love. It was later that I learned she had another suitor, the Duke de Bastille. She couldn't decide which of us to marry. The Duke became an enemy and threatened my life."
"Why did you not go to the police?"
"Would they have believed me any more than now?"
"Good point, monsieur.
Fine wine.
Ah, yes, sir. Monto, just a sip or two, perhaps a glass.
I am not a drinking man, you know.
Yes, sir. Monto, a bottle of port.
Yes, master.
Go on with your story.
Well, one night, there was a ball here in the ballroom. I was dancing with Yvette, and everyone seemed to be happy.
I don't know now, Jacques, but guess who just arrived?
Nothing matters tonight except you and me.
It's our friend, the Duke.
Oh? I don't recall sending him an invitation.
Oh, he sees us. Jacques, he's coming over.
Come on. No sense in having trouble on the dance floor.
Now, that is a pretty picture, is it not? Two in love.
Please. Don't make a scene.
Are you not leading everyone to believe I have lost you?
Keep your voice now.
Oh, you've made a choice all right, Yvette, so it was the fortune that really mattered. You don't want and have not, like me, a man who could give you everything but money.
That's not true.
Go ahead, marry a checkbook and a place to the clothes. That is all you are getting. It won't be a man.
Uh-oh. Here goes 30 years of gentlemanly upbringing. Sorry you said that, my friend.
Oh, watch out! The Duke has a knife!
I'll kill you!
Maybe a difference of opinion about that.
He would have married me if you'd been coming up. Now, if I have soft your throat, is...
The knife away, you fool!
You're so embarrassing, my friend. Stop at this minute, both of you!
It will be over in a moment.
If you kill me, you'll never live to marry Yvette.
Up off the floor. I'm ashamed of you.
Very well, Yvette. I have a better plan to settle our differences anyway. Do you care to listen?
Put the knife away. And I might.
You act like two spoiled children. You're disgraced in front of all your friends.
Very well. Let us go into the other room.
You know, you cut my neck.
Oh, it's bleeding.
You made the mistake of getting me excited.
Take my handkerchief. That will stop the blood.
You know, I don't think you were bluffing.
I would have killed you.
Now, what is this plan of yours?
A wager.
A wager?
Yes.
For what stakes?
One half your fortune.
What? I didn't think I hit you that hard.
What is the wager?
The little stone house in the garden. The one used for storage. I wager I can spend 10 years alone in this house without once coming out, seeing, or talking with anyone.
But it's like a prison. No windows at all. Only a door and a narrow slit at the roof for air. Stone walls are 6 feet thick.
Oh, make it comfortable for me. Get a servant to lower a foot tray once a day through the slit in the ceiling. All I ask is that you send me anything I want to read. I will leave notes to that effect in the empty foot trays, which can be lifted out after I have eaten.
And if you remain for 10 years?
I collect half your fortune. One more thing, though. Yvette should wait until the wager is over before choosing between us. It will be fair, then, as I will have as great a fortune as you.
Suppose you leave before the time is up.
I lose and you are free. Now, to make it legal, we will have a lawyer draw up contracts. The first to violate the agreement forfeits the wager. What do you say, Yvette?
You mean we won't see you again for 10 years?
That is correct. And you must not contact me. Perhaps I will be more attractive to you when I am wealthy.
What if I refuse to do this?
Then I will kill you.
I see. Very well. It's a deal. But remember, we'll all be bound strictly by the contract.
Exactly. Are we not men of honor?
And that's the story behind the house in the garden. The Duke de Vestel has been there ever since.
Incredible. He's there. When does he get out?
The 10 years will be up at midnight, day after tomorrow.
Has the Duke kept his bargain?
To the letter. Monto lowers the food tray once a day, and we hear nothing from him at all.
So? Then why have you summoned the police?
Jacques.
Who is that, monsieur?
My wife, Inspector. Yes?
I do hope I'm not interrupting. I must talk to you.
Certainly, my dear. And Inspector Bordeaux, the Countess Yvette Dumarini.
How do you do? It is my pleasure, madame. Yvette, did you say?
We were married 5 years ago.
I see. She did not wait.
Darling, we can't use the east wing tonight.
Oh? Why not?
First the cellar and now. The servants won't go near them, Jacques. What will we do?
Has something happened, Countess?
Oh, yes. Please tell him, Jacques.
There have been 2 deaths in as many nights. A gardener in the cellar 2 nights ago, and a maid last evening in the east wing.
How did they die?
Apparently natural deaths. Both elderly. Bodies were taken down to a village doctor. Said he could find nothing suspicious.
Did you expect to find anything suspicious?
Well, you see...
Inspector, there is more.
Two deaths in two nights under natural conditions? Probably coincidence. Nothing else. Again, why have you called the police?
The drums.
Drums?
We heard them before the gardener died, and again last night before we found Suzette.
What manner of drum?
The kind you might hear in a jungle.
Someone is playing the game with you.
Who? Yvette, Bonto, and a dozen other trusted servants live here with me. There's no one else except the Duke and the house in the garden.
Pardon me, Master. Here is wine.
Yes, Bonto. Put it by the inspector, please.
Yes, Master. I do not mean to hear. I must tell you, servants do not think Duke's still out there.
What?
Last 3 days, Duke not touch food on tray. Tray's come back full.
Perhaps the man is ill.
Servants think he find out Miss Yvette Mary Count. Maybe he escaped kill everyone with voodoo drums.
Voodoo?
One of the provisions was that he be allowed to read anything he desired. For the past few years, he's requested books on high and low magic, sorcery, witchcraft, and the like.
So? And when did you first hear these drums?
2 nights ago. We had just gone to bed when they began to beat.
Did you make an attempt to locate them?
No, Inspector. We thought one of the servants was playing on them.
They found a gardener in the cellar the next morning.
Servants very frightened.
It is easy enough to clear this up. Give me the key. I will open the house in the garden.
No, not until midnight, the day after tomorrow.
But it's important to know if the Duke is in there.
The contract states I will lose my entire fortune if I do that. We must wait. Couldn't you send for guards to protect us?
Protect you from what, monsieur? Voodoo drums? Inspector Bordeaux would be the laughingstock of all France. No, my dear Count and Countess. You have made a childish wager with an equally childish Duke. And now you are allowing your nerves to play fanciful tricks on you. I cannot help you. My coat, s'il vous plaît.
The road back may be washed out, Inspector. It's a terrible night.
Indeed, yes. Yes, it is a bad night.
You are welcome to stay the night.
There really is something wrong here. Maybe you can find it.
If drums come again, servants leave, I think.
Inspector, have you tried our grape wine? Best stock we've had in years.
Ah, the wine. Indeed, yes. Put me up, just for the night. Perhaps this does bear some looking into.
Fine. Two bottles of grape, Monto.
Two bottles of grape, Master.
Good, Monto. Mind you, only a sip or two. Perhaps a glass. Remember, I am not a drinking man.
Thank you for remaining, Inspector. Let us retire now to the safety of our rooms. I know that you recognize the danger here. If the drums beat again tonight...
Okay. I think I heard you in the far distance there. The far distance.
Oh, there I am.
Oh. There you are.
Forgot. Wrong microphone. I was trapped in zombie land.
Did that to make Gar feel good. Yes, you did.
I did do that to make Gar feel good, yes.
I feel better already.
And no other reason.
Oh, man. I'm in a conundrum because I cannot find my Mego Joker shoes.
Joker shoes?
Yes, they go to the action figure of the Joker.
Okay. I thought they were for you to put on. I was a little confused.
No, that would be a size 8.5, I think. I don't know.
Okay, I can't find my Barbie dream house. Don't feel bad.
Oh, man. Okay, we really need all the listeners really need to help Dale with a write-in campaign to help him find his Barbie dream house.
Yes. I'm a broken man.
I lost my mystery date game about 40 years ago.
Well, it's like that. Mystery date.
Where do you find your mystery man?
Mystery date.
It's kind of a lame commercial, as I recall.
Oh, it was.
Will you get a winner or a loser?
Yeah, will you get a dud?
I can't believe you quote that.
I can understand. They had my picture song, for the dud.
Yeah.
Mystery date.
Oh man. No, I've got a Mego Batcave. One of the things that they had back then, they had the Mego Wayne Foundation, which was this three-tier huge thing for, it was like cardboard and stuff, but it was still, it was a play set for the Mego action figures. Never was able to get that. That was like the holy grail of the Mego action figures, if you could get that thing. Never did.
For those of you that don't know, of you that don't know, Gar is really into old toys, but he's into them because not from like a collectability standpoint of, oh, I'm going to make X amount of. This guy just loves this stuff.
Yeah. I do. Okay, Dave, I'm sorry. I don't have mystery date here.
You don't?
I've got Monster Squad, the game, believe it or not. There was one. Monster Squad.
Was it based on the movie Monster Squad?
No, it was based on the 1976 children's half-hour live-action comedy starring Fred Grandy, who I think was Gopher on the Love Boat.
He was Gopher on Love Boat. And eventually a member of the U.S. House of Representatives as well.
Well, in 1976, it was, my name's Walt, and I'm here in the museum, and every night the monsters come alive. And it was like, okay.
I don't even think I've ever heard of that.
Oh, my gosh. Really? I played the Monster Squad on the Horrible Horror thing as the pre-feature. And because it's like a little half-hour thing, or 24 minutes or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's Frankenstein, Wolfman, and Dracula. And it's oddly, it was written by Stanley Ralph Ross or something. I think that was his name. And he was the same guy that was the writer-producer for the Batman program. So one of the weird things about the monsters, all the monsters have a Batman utility belt, but it says MS on it for Monster Squad. Really crazy, you know, to see Dracula go, I'll have to look into my utility belt, you know, almost a Charlie Callis. Really funny.
I wouldn't guess that Dracula would need a utility belt.
You wouldn't think so. And then the questions arise when he turns into a bat. What happens to the belt?
It falls around his little bat ankles. I don't know.
I don't know. You know, like, Dracula turns into a bat and then he turns back into his human form, and he's not, you know, he's dressed. Now, that might have just been, you know, for censored codes, but you know that was
We have a lot of radio.
We sure do.
We do. In lieu of talking about naked bats, we probably should move along to the conclusion of macabre.
Macrame. Macaroni.
Macabre.
Macaroon.
In the house in the garden, we'll be back. I promise.
There he is again. Drums. Shock. Wake up. The drums are beating.
What'd you say?
Shh. Listen.
Coming from the hall. Hurry. Let's go.
Don't go out there, please.
I've got to see who's behind me.
Oh, wait for me.
Stand on one side of the door.
Shh.
There's something outside in the hall. Shh. Watch it. Come with me. Inspector Bordeaux here. Our midnight drummer went around the corner. With eight, we might apprehend this scoundrel.
Oh, Inspector, we thought...
Either way, Inspector, you have the lantern. I was almost asleep when I heard the sound. You were very wise to summon me. This is either a practical joke or a ghastly plan of murder.
Look, a shadow around the bend.
Hurry. Wait. That tapestry, it's moving. What is behind it?
An alcove.
Our phantom is probably in there. Careful now. Now, up!
Marie! did have to do this to you.
Who is this girl, monsieur?
Marie, one of my wife's maids. Is she?
She's gone. A dreadful look of fright. Were the others like this?
Yes. No signs of violence.
Ari! He's getting away!
Oh. I must have gone up the West Tower. I'll hand her the lantern. I'll lead the way.
Through this door!
Man's difficult with death from the sort of stairway. Here, take my hand, Carlton.
Thank you, Inspector.
See anything up ahead?
Not yet. We're almost at the top landing, and we'll have him cornered.
Be careful, Jock.
Just a little farther.
Ah!
What's it? Broken step.
Oh, yeah, we're all right.
Hey, have a gun, just in case.
Easy does it now.
Shine the lantern around.
It has to be up here somewhere.
Look behind that post.
A shadow moved.
Where is that?
You, come out from behind that post. Now we know where you are. Have a gun?
I can't see a thing.
Keep on the way. There's something hiding right over there.
It moved again.
Stop or I'll shoot.
No, I didn't do it.
Kindly raise your hand.
No, you must believe me.
That's why the guard. Look out for the open window behind you. Francois, poor devil.
But why would he? What reason?
What do you think, Inspector?
Nothing further can be done here. We'll take care of the body in the morning. I suggest we retire to our rooms and try to get some rest.
So relieved it's finally over. Aren't you, Jacques?
I wouldn't fail to go to my door.
Why?
Because, my dear, you are wrong. The real killer is still at large.
Like Manteau calling us to breakfast.
Coming, Manteau. Hold on. Be right there.
Good morning, Master. Have bad news.
Huh? How's that?
Servants hear about Marie and Francois last night. All leaving.
Why? They can't leave us here all alone way out here.
They say Kersant Castle. Everyone die. They not stay. Manteau not like voodoo drums either.
Where is the inspector?
He having breakfast downstairs.
Tell him we'll be right down.
Yes, Master. But hurry. Inspector plan open house in garden.
Ah, the last breakfast the cook made before she left. May I share it with you?
I'll have only coffee, please. And you, Yvette?
Oh, yes, just coffee.
Manteau says you plan to open the house in the garden.
Indeed. It is about time. Or do you both want to die in your sleep?
And you believe there is someone in the castle causing this?
Not necessarily.
Oh, how did you know it wasn't Francois?
The killer we were following had already passed the tower room when we found the dead maid. He couldn't have come back without being seen. Francois found Marie before we did. Afraid we would mistake him for the murderer, he, like a coward, ran up the tower. He accidentally fell out the window.
Master, the servant's now gone. Only we left.
All right, Manteau. Inspector, I have a plan. Give me one more night.
One more night, monsieur. May find all of us dead in our beds. There is a madman loose. I cannot risk it.
Manteau can guard Yvette in the castle tonight. You and I will take up watch by the house in the garden. What do you say?
I think we should leave this place immediately.
Yvette, how about it? One more night?
Oh, I'm frightened. But if Manteau will promise not to leave me.
Manteau guard countess with life.
There we are. Now, how about it?
Well, it seems I am outvoted. Very well, then. One more night. However, I cannot guarantee you will be alive in the morning. The storm has passed, but the night is disagreeable, no?
Yes. Turn up the lantern, please, Inspector. It's very dark.
There. That is better now. This is the house in the garden, no?
Right. Made of stone. About 30 feet square. No windows.
So you mentioned. Very quiet in there. Like a tomb, eh?
In a way. Here's the stone door. I have the only key. Without it, we'd have to blast to get in. Hasn't been open since we locked him up.
Uh-huh. And that opening near the door?
That's where his food trays are lowered. 6 inches by 24, just a slit.
A foreboding prison. If it is still a prison. I strongly advise you to open it up for your own safety.
He couldn't have escaped.
Who beat the drums? They came from the castle, not here in the garden. What do you think?
You wouldn't accept my explanation.
My dear Count, please do not expect me to believe in witchcraft or voodoo. This is 1910, the 20th century.
Then we'll hear the drums no more. The Duke is there, and only Yvette and Manteau remain in the castle, right?
Exactly. There is no one else left to beat them, if you have assumed correctly.
I suppose we are reasonably safe.
Perhaps we are.
What's that? The drums.
From the castle. Yvette! Quickly, we may be too late to save her. Cellar door.
Drums came from the cellar?
I think so. I will go first with the lantern.
There's nothing down here except rows of wine casks.
We will be at the bottom in a moment.
You see anything?
Only wine casks. Listen. What is dripping? Wine?
Hardly. Come on.
Dripping is growing louder. Perhaps around this corner.
Something on the floor there.
What? Wait. Monto!
Is he dead?
No. A blow on the head. Monto, quickly. Where is the Countess?
I protect Countess. Someone hit me with drum. I
dragged you into the cellar. But where is the Countess?
Inspector, the dripping. It's blood.
Indeed.
Overhead. Something lying on that wine cask. Raise the lantern.
It's a woman. The Countess. She is alive. Her face is turning toward... Good Lord. What happened to her face? Yvette!
Oh, no! I didn't... Oh, God, I didn't do this. I won't believe...
She is dead, my friend. This will not help her.
I know who did it. He couldn't stand my happiness. The Duke. Yes, the Duke. Killed him up.
Let's go. I'll get the key.
I advise you to calm yourself. Where are you going?
To the Duke. Yes, to the Duke. We'll do what he wants at last. We'll open the house and the garden.
Most unusual. This door has been locked for years. He could not escape. Monsieur, I am completely baffled. I confess, I do not know who has harmed you.
Manteau, help me with this key.
Yes, master. It turned other way.
Oh, all right. Turn.
Turn.
There. Inspector, give us a hand.
Here we go, monsieur.
Door swings out. Here we go now. Pull.
Let me go first. I am armed. Bring the lantern, Monto.
Yes, Inspector.
What do you see? Is he there?
I do not see him as yet. Shine the lantern on, Monto.
Well?
He is not here. He has escaped.
What?
I believe I understand everything at last, Count de Marigny.
Quickly. Where is he, Inspector?
Give me time to think. He could only have escaped with the help of one person, the man who brought his food.
You accuse me?
Yes.
No.
Monto used your key to open the door. The Duke escaped and planned the voodoo drum death with the help of Monto, who did the actual killing.
No.
Monto? But why?
The Duke promised him a part of your fortune.
They hope to frighten you into opening the house early in order to collect your entire estate. And they have succeeded, monsieur. You lose everything.
The Duke broke his agreement first by escaping.
Only after I learned Yvette had not waited for marriage as agreed. Now have you not opened the door and found me here?
You, the Duke de Bastia?
My dear Count. Have I changed so much in 10 years?
You promised you not tell.
The beard. I see.
I intercepted your summons for the police and masqueraded as Inspector Bordeaux. Then I persuaded you to open the house in the garden, where you found that the Duke had gone.
Inspector, the door is closing. We'll be trapped. You'll die. No.
Stop. Don't close the door. We can't get out. We'll die. No. Don't do it, Count.
Macabre, a special Far East Network presentation. In our cast were John Buey as Inspector Bordeaux, Walt Shelton as the Duke de Bastel, Shirley Ashe as Countess Yvette, William Verdier as Count Jacques de Marigny, and Airman First Class James Conley as Monteau. Technical supervision by Airman First Class Larry Clements. Special sound patterns by Air Force Sergeants Bob Eddy and Newell Stewart. This is Air Force Sergeant Al LePage speaking. Macabre was written and directed by William Verdier.
Eerie House Radio proudly presents Scar's Moral of the Story.
A man that lived in the year 1910 that does not drink will be dead in 72 to 120 hours. Because in 1910, the same as in 2020, dehydration waits for no man.
There we go.
Well, there was one character, and he kept saying, you know, I don't drink, but could I have some water?
Yeah. But he's chugging away.
Yeah. So
I liked him.
Like, wow.
I think that was the inspector, no?
Yes.
Yeah,
I liked his approach. I don't drink. Keep pouring.
Yeah. So I came up with a dehydration.
I don't drink anymore. I just don't drink any less. That's what.
That's right. We got a whole lot of radio.
We do.
Let's race right on over to our episode of Escape tonight. Papa.
Yes.
Benjamin.
Yeah, we'll hear William Conrad in this one, too.
Ooh.
I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I believe.
Oh, yeah. I'll agree.
Yep, let's rush on over to Escape from
January 24th, 1948.
Groping down a dark alleyway in the French Quarter of New Orleans, driven by terror, hounded by the curse of the Papaloi, a curse from which there is no escape. Escape, produced by William N. Robeson and carefully contrived to free you from the four walls of today. For a half hour of high adventure. Today we escape into two worlds. One of modern jazz, the other of primitive voodoo. And to a doomed man who brought them together. As William Irish imagined it in his eerie story, Papa Benjamin. We'll be right back.
New Orleans Police Department, 4th Precinct, Sergeant Tolliver speaking. Yeah? Yeah? Well, pick him up on a drunk 723. Right. Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
Are you in charge here?
Yeah. Hey, aren't you Eddie Block, the band leader?
That's right.
Hey, Joe, look who's here, Eddie Block.
Well, never thought we'd get a visit from a big celebrity like you, Mr. Block. And at 4 o'clock in the morning, I suppose, though, this is just the shank of the evening for a big shot orchestra leader.
Oh, hell, what can we do for you, Mr. Block?
I've just killed a man.
You're kidding.
I tell you, I've just killed a man.
I guess you've been working too hard, Mr. Block. You're imagining things.
Here, here's the gun. Look at it.
Sit down, Block. Better have a drink of water. You'll feel better.
No. I'm all right.
Sarge?
Yeah?
This gun's been used all right. Smell.
Wasn't an accident, Mr. Block?
No.
Who'd you use it on? Who was it?
I don't know his name. They call him Papa Benjamin.
Sounds like
yeah. A white man?
No. He was a Negro.
Well, now, in New Orleans...
No. There was nothing like that.
Well, what was he doing to you?
He was killing me.
Killing you? But how?
Look at me. I used to weigh 200 pounds. I'm down to 102.
Yeah, but how? How was he killing you?
Would you believe in anything you can't see, can't hear, can't touch?
Well...
I've been to the biggest doctors in the world. If they don't believe me, how can I expect you to? I'll simply say I'm cracked and let it go at that. I don't want to spend the rest of my life in an asylum.
Look, Mr. Black, you say he was a Negro named Papa Bench.
Yes, an old man, 80, maybe 90. Skin and bones, he could hardly walk. And I shot him.
You sure? You sure you killed him?
Yes, of course.
Where?
I don't know exactly. In a little back alley in the Vieux Carré. Near Congo Square.
Supposing you take us there. Can you do that? Then maybe we'll find out this is just a bad dream.
This is the alley. To the right between the buildings.
All right, let's go. You pack, Sarge.
Catch cold without it.
Don't go back there, honey.
Quiet, you.
Oh, cop.
Nice neighborhood.
This is it. In that door and up the stairs.
Well, come on.
No. Don't make me go up there again, please.
You better come, Mr. Block. You're showing us.
Yeah, flash your light. There's somebody here on the stairs.
He won't bother us. Dead drunk. Now step over him and let's go. This ain't the most pleasant neighborhood to come calling on.
This it?
Yes. In that door.
Oh, come on.
Better call the commissioner. Mr. Block wasn't kidding. This man's dead.
But why? Why?
Because he was killing me, Commissioner.
Then it was self-defense.
He never came near me once. I was the one who went to him. I offered him $3,000, $10,000, any amount, and he refused. I offered him my gun and asked him to shoot me with it to get it over with quickly and not to drag it out any longer.
Then when he said no, you shot him?
Yeah. So you can lock me up now.
Mr. Block, do you think we want to hang a murder rap on you, one of the most popular celebrities in the United States? Use your head. I'm trying to find an out for you.
He was killing me.
Look, an 80-year-old colored man who's so feeble he can't even go upstairs by himself, who has to have his food pulled up to him in a basket, is killing who? A stumble bum his own age? No. Mr. Eddie Block, the top band leader of America, who can name his own price anywhere, who has about everything a man can want. Tell me just one thing, Mr. Block. How was he killing you?
My thinking thought waves of death that reached me through the air.
Now, Mr. Block, you surely don't...
You want to hush the whole thing up, don't you?
No, Mr. Block, no. But I'm going to get the whole story. So you might as well start telling me from the beginning.
Well, all right. It began one night about 2 years ago. We were playing at Maxim's on Charles Street. We were just another band, a small Dixieland outfit then. Eddie Block and his chips. Judy Jarvis, my wife, did the vocals. But we weren't setting the world on fire. Business was so bad, I knew what to expect when I got a call from the manager one night after closing time.
Come in. Oh, hi, Eddie.
I thought we'd better have a little talk.
It's that bad, huh?
We took in $4,500 this week.
I see. And you can cancel my contract anytime it falls under $5,000. I get it.
Eddie, they can get the same liquor and sandwiches anywhere, but they'll go where the band has something. Tonight there were more waiters in the place than there were customers. Judy didn't even get a hand.
It's not her fault,
I know,
Graham.
It's not her fault. She's okay. But I'm asking you, what's wrong?
I don't know. I'm getting the latest arrangement sent to me from New York. We sweat our heads bald off rehearsing.
Well, this is New Orleans, practically the cradle of jazz. You got to give them something new.
Yeah, I know. When do I leave?
Well, finish the week out, see if you can do something about it by Monday. If not, I'll have to wire St. Louis to get Kruger's band. I'm sorry, Eddie, but...
It's all right. It's okay. You're not running a charity bazaar. But I didn't feel so cocky about it. It looked like we were on the skids. The band just didn't seem to have it. And I wasn't good enough to figure out why and pull them out of it. I was feeling pretty low when I went back to the deserted bandstand to pick up some music. The place was dark and empty except for a couple of scrub women cleaning up. A dark nightclub can be an eerie place sometimes. I got that feeling just before I saw it. I saw it lying there on the floor between the stands. It was a severed chicken claw with a red ribbon tied around it. I almost laughed. How did that thing get there? Then I picked it up and tossed it out on the floor where the scrub women were cleaning up. I certainly wasn't expecting the reaction I got. They took one look. They turned and ran out. I just recovered from that surprise and was bending down to pick up some music that had slipped to the floor when I heard someone come in. I guess I was pretty well hidden from view. Anyway, he didn't see me. It was Johnny Statz, my drummer. And he was acting funny, looking intently at the floor, searching for something. Suddenly, he spotted this chicken claw on the floor and grabbed it up with a terrific sigh of relief, stuffed it into his pocket, and walked out. What I did then, I did on a strange impulse, and it changed the whole course of my life. I followed Johnny Statz. I suppose I just meant to catch up with him and have a cup of coffee with him somewhere and ask him about the chicken claw. But as I followed him farther and farther down into the Vieux Carré, down to Congo Square, it was a growing curiosity that kept me on his trail. When he turned into that dark alleyway, I stopped and debated. I felt like an eavesdropper, and yet something drew me on. And I walked up that dark alley. I passed that one lighted window.
I told you before, don't go back there, honey.
But I went on, through a sort of tunnel into another alleyway. And then I stopped. Ahead of me, Johnny Statz stood before a dark, dismal-looking old wreck of a building. Suddenly he whistled. A gigantic man appeared from out of the shadows. Johnny handed him the chicken claw, and he was motioned into the building. And then I heard sounds coming from the upstairs of that building. A throbbing drum, a wailing, an unearthly sound, and yet wonderful. an exotic, fascinating rhythm. This was music, something new, something sensational. Something that would set New Orleans on its ear and put Eddie Block in the big time. I had to get in there and hear it. I was mighty busy for the next 5 minutes. I ran back down the alley, overturning 5 or 6 garbage cans before I found what I needed. Then back to that lighted window in the alley and a 5-spot in exchange for a red ribbon. Then I was back at the dark building, walking up to that menacing shadow.
Blood up. Let me see your face.
Okay, okay. Easy with that knife. My ribs are tender.
Your face never been here before.
My friend Johnny Stats up there. He'll tell you.
Mr. Johnny, your friend, he asked you to come here?
This Chicken Claw told me to come.
Papa Benjamin sent you that?
Certainly. You'll make me late. Papa Benjamin wouldn't like that.
All right, go along here. First thing you know, all New Orleans is going to be coming around here.
I groped up the stairs, half expecting to feel his knife in my back. But I got to the top safely. Cautiously, I opened the door and slipped in. The room was full of people. They were in such a state of frenzy, I wasn't even noticed. I slipped into a corner and slid down by the wall, sitting on the floor. It was a sight I'll never forget. Wild, fantastic, hideous, revolting, fascinating. In the center of the room was an incredibly old man, naked to the waist, wearing a hideous mask and holding a live chicken. There was wild gestures, weird incantations, frantic dancing, shouting and rolling of eyes, and there was blood. And always there was the chant. Nobody noticed me. After a moment, I took a piece of copy paper out of my pocket and began putting down the notes. It was wonderful, fantastic, and wonderful. In 10 minutes, I had it, and I'd seen enough. Enough for a lifetime of nightmares. I began to feel sick, and I wanted to get out. I started to stand up. Suddenly, the room went dead.
Stranger is here.
His bony arm stretched out straight from the shoulder, pointing at me like an arrow, and there was blood on it.
What you do here?
Papa Loy, I know this man. Let me find out.
No one moved. There was no sound in the room as Johnny Stats came over and squatted beside me.
You're in terrible trouble, Eddie. I don't know if I can get you out of it.
What is this, Statson? What are you doing here?
There's no time to talk now. You've got to do something quicker. You'll be a dead man.
Why? I'm in the very heart of New Orleans. They wouldn't dare.
Listen, you've seen enough tonight. You know better. Eddie, there's only one way.
What?
Join. Become one of us.
Oh, no.
It's the only way, Eddie. I can't save you. And you'd better hurry up. Unless you do, you'll never get out of here alive. You know what this is, don't you? This is voodoo.
Okay, sure. I'll join up. Why not?
Oh, wait a minute, Eddie. There's a lot more to it than you think. Unless you're serious, it'd be better to get cut to pieces right now.
Don't worry, I'm serious.
All right.
Papa Loy, his spirit wishes to join our spirits.
The old man burned some feathers while the others watched silently. Then he nodded.
Came out all right. He read them. The spirits are willing.
There were other things. Rituals, ceremonies, another sacrifice. Then, after the chanting started again, they brought me the sacrificial bowl. I didn't have to be told what was in it. I started to draw back.
Drink, Eddie, drink, or they'll kill you on the spot.
Late next morning, the band assembled at Maxim's for a rehearsal. When Johnny Stats got there, he found another drummer sitting in his place. Naturally, he came to me.
Hey, what's all this about, Eddie?
I don't want any voodoo lover in my band, that's all. Stats, here's a check for 2 weeks' salary.
So you're crossing him, are you? Brother, I wouldn't want to be in your shoes for all the gold in Fort Knox.
Hell, if you mean that bad dream last night, I haven't told anybody, and I won't. I'd be laughed at. I'm only remembering what I can use of it. The jungle is just trees to me. The Congo a river, and nighttime just a time for electric lights.
Yeah, but this new number you're going to rehearse this morning.
I said I'd remember what I can use.
Listen, Eddie, that chant is sacred. Secret.
It was secret.
Eddie, don't do it.
Look, here's a couple of C notes. Hand them these. That ought to pay my dues up from now to doomsday, and I don't want a receipt. And if they try putting poison in my orange juice, they'll end up in a chain
gang. It's not that easy, Eddie. You're one of us now.
Oh, get out.
Okay. Goodbye, dead man.
Here and not much time to wrap it up.
Get by your phone.
Yes, not much time to wrap up this last part. Okay, sorry, I keep switching headsets, hoping to find one that works. All right, let's wrap up Escape with what little time we got left. We'll be back.
Okay.
Graham, the manager of the club, changed his mind about canceling our contract when he heard us rehearse the chant. Instead, he spent 5 G's in publicity, and Saturday night was set for the big unveiling. Seemed like all New Orleans tried to jam into Maxim's. Came to hear the voodoo chant, the real thing. Just before we were ready to hit it, Judy came up to me.
Eddie, listen, let's not do it.
What do you mean, baby, not do it? Well, this is it. This is our ticket to the big time. It'll be a sensation.
I know, but I got a funny feeling, Eddie. And look, I found this under your dressing room door just a little while ago. It sounds like a warning. Somebody doesn't want you to play that number.
Let me see. You can summon the spirits, but can you dismiss them again? Think well. Oh, forget it, baby. Stats is trying to scare me because I fired him.
Ladies and gentlemen.
All right, come on, let's go. They're waiting.
Maxim takes great pleasure in bringing you a historic moment in musical history. You're about to hear for the first time anywhere the voodoo chant, the age-old ceremonial rhythm no one but the initiated has ever heard before. This is the real thing, ladies and gentlemen, an accurate transcription. Not a note has been changed. So now, Eddie Block and his chips present for the first time anywhere the voodoo chant.
Sensation. They went crazy for it. They screamed for more, but we were playing it cagey. Once a night, that'd pack them in. After it was over, I went back to our dressing room. Judy got there before me. She was reading a newspaper somebody had brought in.
Eddie, listen.
Oh, baby, you were wonderful. We wowed them. We're in the money now.
Yeah, Eddie, but...
Boy, am I tired. I feel more tired than I've ever felt in my life. Nervous strain, I guess, huh? Let down?
Eddie, look. Here in the paper.
Oh, who cares about the paper now?
Eddie, it's Johnny Stutz.
Hmm?
He's dead. He drowned himself in Lake Pontchartrain this afternoon.
Eight. This afternoon? But then that note, it wasn't Johnny.
Oh, Eddie, look, you can't blame yourself.
Me? Oh, no, of course not, but I think I know who to blame.
What do you mean?
Nothing.
Eddie, why don't you lie down and rest for a few minutes? You look worn out.
Yes, I am. I feel dead.
Here, let me take off your coat.
Oh, be careful.
What's the matter?
I don't know. Funny thing. While I was waving the baton on that and the chat, I felt something, a sharp pain in my back, like a pin or something stuck me.
I don't feel anything there now. Maybe it slipped down.
I don't know.
Couldn't have been much. There. Now you just lie down. You'll feel better in a few minutes. You've been working too hard, Eddie. You should relax now and maybe take a few days off. Hey, Eddie, look here. Where'd this come from?
What?
It's a little doll. It was lying on the dressing table. Why, Eddie, it looks just like you.
Let me see.
Now, that's funny. Look, there in the back. There's a little pin sticking in the back.
Yes. That's right where I felt the pain. That started it. Next day, I had a backache. Later, there was a numbness that spread to my shoulders, arms, and legs. I felt tired all the time, listless, dead. I began to lose weight. I couldn't get Johnny Stats out of my mind. He'd introduced me to them, vouched for me, and he'd committed suicide. He knew. He hadn't waited. I decided to get out of New Orleans. I went to New York, playing the chant, of course. I had to. It was my biggest asset now. But nothing changed. I was losing weight, from a husky 200 down to 160, and I couldn't sleep. Maybe if I put an ocean between... I took an offer in London, toured the continent, away a year. I was an international hit now, the biggest attraction in music. But I was down to 110, dying on my feet. The doctors couldn't figure it out. Reynolds in London told me.
You're as normal, Mr. Block, as anyone I ever examined. You're so well balanced that you haven't even got that extra little touch of imagination most actors and musicians have.
I guess that's true, Doctor. I'm just mediocre. And yet you might say my success is killing me. And so after 2 years, I finally realized it was no use. I came back to New Orleans, back to the dark alleyway down near Congo Square. I could just barely drag myself along, but I had to see Papa Benjamin. I slowly climbed the stairs up to that loathsome door and went in. There he was, Papa Benjamin, staring at me from the bed as if he'd been expecting me. And then he started to laugh. Take that curse off me. Give me my life back. I'll do anything you say.
What has been done cannot be undone. Do you think the spirits of earth, air, fire, water know what forgiveness means?
Intercede for me, then. You brought it about. Here's money. I'll give you twice as much. All I earn, all I ever hope to earn.
You have fouled the Obeah. Death has been on you from that night. All over the world and in the air above, you have mocked the spirits with a chant that summons them.
And please, here's a gun. Kill me now and be done with it. I can't stand anymore. All you have to do is shoot. I'll write a note, sign it, say I did it myself.
Death will come, but different. Slow. Oh, slow.
No, I can't stand that. I won't. Maybe if I kill you, maybe then the spell will be broken.
No.
That's it. Kill you.
No.
And that's all, Commissioner. Then I came here, the police station. You know the rest. Well?
All right, Mr. Block.
You don't believe me, do you?
Yes, I believe you. Not about the curse, of course. That was your own mind. They planted the suggestion in your mind, and you did the rest. But it's plain that you killed in self-defense. Crazy kind of self-defense, but I think we can manage it. We'll try.
The commissioner managed it, all right. How is almost a story in itself. How a detective with a moulage false face posed as Papa Benjamin and called the voodoo clan together and into a trap. How they collected the evidence that proved my story.
and how they sent most of that voodoo bunch to jail. My name wasn't even connected with the case. So now I'm free. I'm living again. I've gained weight. The tiredness, the numbness is gone. I took a nice vacation, went to Bermuda, relaxed, and had fun. Now I'm back in New Orleans at Maxim's, and the whole thing is forgotten. We're opening tonight, and the place is packed. Everybody's come to hear the chant. Eddie Block and the chant. We're on our way now, and nothing can stop us.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, we welcome back on his triumphal return, Eddie Block and his chips, playing for you the one and only Voodoo Chant.
Look at them, Judy. They're eating it up.
Yeah.
What's the matter?
I was hoping I'd never hear this thing again.
What do you mean? It's your trademark. Yours and Eddie's.
I tried to persuade him not to do it. He wouldn't listen.
Why? You aren't imagining all that voodoo.
I don't know. It was all in his mind, and it nearly killed him. I don't think you can put it out of your mind and forget so easy. When Eddie plays it again...
Oh, nonsense.
Hey, wait a minute.
What?
Look at Eddie. There's something wrong.
What? Well, he's staggering.
Eddie!
Hey,
Eddie!
Judy, wait. Now, let me pick him up. He's probably just fainted from the...
No! No, leave him alone. He's dead. I guess Papa Benjamin won after all.
Escape, produced by William N. Robeson and directed by Norman McDonald, today brought you Papa Benjamin by William Irish, adapted for radio by John Dunkel, with Frank Lovejoy as Eddie Block, Louis Van Ruten as Papa Benjamin, Harry Bartell as the police commissioner, and Joan Banks as Judy. Music was conducted by Eddie Dunstetter. Next week...
You are speeding through the night on the Istanbul Express. You are alone and unarmed. And suddenly you realize that your life is in danger. That somewhere on the train are deadly killers from whom you must escape.
Scars, moral of the story.
Never to steal another man's mojo. It's best to buy it at a 1/3 markup. Okay, we're out.
There we go. All right. Tomorrow night, it's CBS Radio Mystery Theater with the house. Of the Voodoo Queen. Ooh, that's one more voodoo doll to stick a pin into, huh? That's tomorrow here on Erie House Radio at 6:30 Eastern, which ends at 8. Gosh, what happens next? Quickly.
At 8 o'clock on Twitch, whatever it is, we're doing Ghost. Ghost stories. Ghost, ghost, ghost on horrible horror.
Starring?
Don Knotts?
Yes. No, starring Gary Ghoul. Who else?
Oh, Guard the Ghoul, yeah, that guy.
We'll see you guys tomorrow night at 6:30. Say goodnight, Dave.
Goodnight, Dave.
Goodnight, Dave.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And him.
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
There we go.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
dramatic ending. There
you go. I never did find those darn shoes.
No, I don't know. I don't think my microphone ever got working. Let me test it.
Hey, what the heck? What the heck? I thought you were leaking. Oh, are you leaking?
What's going on? It's on mute, Dale. It's on mute.
Oh, yeah, I rubber cemented it. Okay.
On the school. Here, let me see if I can put it up for you.
No, I got it.
Okay, there you go. It's off mute.
Can you hear me?
I hear you. I can hear you from your phone. I hear you. Through your phone.
Can you hear me now?
I hear you now.
Through your phone. Not through your...
Now. How about now?
Hearing that, yeah.
I'll have to figure all that out tomorrow.
Thanks, Blog Talk.
No, that was my headset. That's my headset. Or something.
Oh, your headset?
Some setting on my computer. For some reason,
I
was doing some recording today, and that may have fouled me up.
Oh. because a program will take over. And then when you go to use another program that uses audio, it's stuck on the other program.
Maybe. Could be.
Could be. I don't know.
Could be. I'll kick it.
Or it could be sunspots.
Sunspots, yeah. Oh.
Or I know why it doesn't work. Or it could be Raisinets. I think Raisinets are a good reason not to work, right?
I never liked Raisinets.
Only if you're
not a Raisinet guy.
Well, there's another reason not to like Raisinets, then.
Yeah, them and Fig Newtons, not a fan.
Really?
Yeah. Ever since Fig Newtons was singing, you know, the big Fig Newton.
Oh, yeah. I thought Iggy, biggy,
inside, oh, Iggy,
yes.
Boy, outside. You read the inside and the outside and the good darn tootin'.
The big Fig Newton. Yeah,
not the big
Fig Newton.
Fig Newton, what?
Then it was like, no, I can't do this.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So both of you guys have said, I believe, that you absolutely denounce that thing, that weird thing in the universe called the Christmas fruitcake. You don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't honestly know if I like it or not.
Wow.
You've never tried it?
Well,
no,
Dave, if you don't like
it,
you use it as a doorstop. You know. I mean.
Yeah, it could be a good doorstop, yeah.
Yeah.
He uses a window
potatoes. You know how au gratin potatoes got their name, right? First guy to taste it said, au gratin.
Au gratin?
I like au gratin potatoes.
Is
that a Polish word?
What
are we saying?
Facetious.
Oh. Wait, facetious, is that a German word? What are we saying here?
No, that's facial. Wrong word.
Hello. What?
Nothing.
That's when you say Gesundheit.
Right.
That could be a German word.
Gesundheit.
It is a German word, Gesundheit. I want to learn Latin.
Man, I'm going to have to learn French.
I have a hard enough time understanding my English, let alone another language.
I can teach you all the French you need to know right now. I surrender.
my French gal pal will love that joke.
I'm sure she will.
Got me in trouble.
Speak you again.
Got me in trouble once I did a skit and on my show and put it up on YouTube, and it was... a spoof of the Patton speech, you know, where he's walking in front of the American flag.
Right.
Well, I rewrote it instead of about, you know, going on to victory and moving forward is all about surrendering and running away so that your children will be able to say that they are alive because I was not killed in the war. You know, stuff like that.
Wow. Okay.
And completely rewrote the speech, and this dude started getting on me, but then he laughed. He said, no, I'm teasing you. It was actually funny. But he had me worried that I offended him.
I have, and again, fun with memories. Like my RAM chips are just broken or something. I'm not sure. But I know for a fact that in middle school, so this is like 1978, that I was exposed to two different things. One was French, one was Spanish, and we took each.
Oh, thank God.
About
I thought you were
going to
say one was the gym teacher. But go ahead.
Huh? No. So we had six weeks of each. And I remember, like, Le Plume, you know. But, yeah, I got nothing more than that. So, but I'm going to have to learn more. To parlez-vous français and all that jazz. Because it would behoove me. It will benefit me to know such things. If she can learn a second language, then so can I. Why not? Sure.
I just want to learn an archaic one.
Archaic, like the
like Latin. It's not used anymore much. I mean, bits of it are used in the sciences.
See, the good thing about learning
legal.
Latin is no one can correct you.
Yeah,
because it's not
true.
A spoken language.
I think you're wrong there, Gar. I think you're wrong there, Gar.
See, I'll accept that.
I just corrected you.
Yeah, there's always someone to correct you.
Well, yeah,
on,
but you don't have to
put
listen
it on
to
the them. Social media. Someone will correct you.
Well, or disagree with you. One of the two.
Of course.
Might not be correcting, and it could be wrong. You never know.
But it doesn't matter. It's social media.
I was talking to Dave earlier before the show, and I was telling him, I had an instance this week where my memory failed me. And I sent someone $1,200, and I have no recollection of it.
I got to go. I think my dog needs a... No.
I need to get a dog so
here.
I can
gotta go.
Yeah. Well, I didn't. It wasn't you that I sent the $1,200 to.
Yeah, I know.
But I got this letter that said we're not going to sell your information. It's sitting there. I'm like, who are you? So I called a few different other people to validate.
That took you $1,200.
Yeah, to validate what's going on, and then finally I called him. I was like, "Hi, da da da," and I was like, "Why are you saying that you're not going to send?" And come to find out that I was a member, and then come to find out that back in February, I sent them money to above board. It was all above board. It was about homeowners insurance, and I have no recollection of
and
it.
And a Nigerian prince.
Yeah, exactly. So,
it was a legitimate company, and Gar told me, he never told me what the company was, but he told me he changed home insurance. But he never told me the company.
Yeah. And
I bought a car? What?
Yeah, exactly. What? That car's mine? Really? What? So that was just really bizarre. And then I had another instance here with my toys where... supposedly, I got some toys in November, and I started looking around the house. I do not have this toy. I don't know where it is or what. I went back to UPS and I was like, "Hey guys, help me out with this." And I was like, "Oh no, you got it right here. We've got." And so today I went to UPS, picked up stuff, got home, opened up the box, and it was a toy. It was like it did not get delivered. I don't know how it happened, but. Yeah, I opened the box and was like, wait, this is what I've been looking for a week or so. So, crazy.
Wait a minute. Let's tell this story over again. Wait, I got to find it. Oh, nope, that's not it. Doggone it. Dave, didn't we have... we had the actual theme from... One Step Beyond. That would have been good to tell that story.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, here it is.
Right.
Start over.
Okay, sure, go ahead. So, about 2 weeks ago, I lost my toys, and... yeah. And then today I found them. Yeah.
I feel a boing coming up here.
Yeah. Well, no, I really... So I found that, right? And so then I went looking for another thing because they say, oh, no, it was delivered. And I was like, okay, it was delivered, sure. And I have it in my mind. I kind of see it, and maybe it's there. Okay, and then I go looking for it. Nothing. This is nuts. All right. It's here somewhere. But these are like little teeny, about the size of your index finger, little teeny things,
The long story short, you did find what you were looking for.
Well, I found one of the things I was looking for because it wasn't here. It was at UPS, and UPS said I already got it. Uh-huh. I didn't. I went there today, and I got a bunch of stuff, and then I came home, and I opened it, and I was like, wait, this is what I was looking for. Son of a... Okay, so you guys are wrong, and, well, it's okay. But then I went looking for this other thing that supposedly I got a week or so ago, and I can't find it anywhere. And I'm like, did I get it?
Did you ever
find
it?
I think I got it. I don't know. No, I never found it. No, this new thing.
Well, I got music for that if you didn't find the toy.
I never found my Joker shoes. My Joker, he has no shoes. Yeah.
Maybe the joke's on you.
The joke's on me. Oh, Dave. There you go.
Yeah, he gets a boing. Yeah. A boing for Dave.
Yeah. So I had the box. I had the figure, and he has no shoes in it. So I bought separate shoes, put the two together. He's got shoes and all this, and I can't find the shoes. So I don't know. Such is the fun of collecting toys.
I have stuff I have, but I don't have. I know I have it somewhere. Oh God, I'm so
like,
disorganized.
I've got that Lost in Space robot, the Remco one. Is it Remco? Yeah, Remco. And it's a 1970, mid-70s one.
Mm.
Oh, no, not Remco. Ahai, Azrak Hamway. If you're
familiar. Yeah.
Azrak Hamway International is Ahai, short. And they made a whole bunch of toys in the 70s. And they made a Lost in Space robot.
Robot toys, got music for that.
So I've got the robot. You know the robot that I sent you guys? I think it was Robbie. I turned mine on, and the batteries and everything are in there. It walks backwards. Yours walk forward, mine walk backwards. I don't know what's up with that.
You put the batteries in wrong.
That's what I thought, but no. And if you did,
joking.
would it go backwards or would it not work?
I don't know, but periodically Robbie and the B9 have a war over here of words.
Oh, they talk
back and
forth? But
the B9 has a lot to say. He's got a lot of different sound bites in him.
Uh-huh.
The B9 that you sent us.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got Forbidden Planet, Robbie has what, maybe 6, 7, maybe 8 different things he says? I swear that Lost in Space robot has, like, a dozen different sound bites.
Mm-hmm. Dave, does yours have arguments?
Mine don't have arguments. They get along rather well.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, they stay away from the booze. Once in a while, they play a game of poker, but it's only for computer chips, you know?
Yeah. Mine had ego issues. They fight.
Didn't Robbie make rum in the movie?
I believe
like
he
500
did. Or some sort of alcoholic beverage. First he synthesized some food, and then the one worker on the ship said, hey, make me some hooch.
Cook.
The guy that would later be the captain on Police Woman.
Earl Holloman.
Earl Holloman, yeah. He was like, hey, robot, can you make booze? He was like, yes, I can.
Oh, yeah. The good stuff.
The good stuff.
Make me some absinthe. No.
Yeah. Yeah, well, who knows back then. I don't even know if that was around then.
Probably the real stuff was back then.
They had stuff. There's some stuff, and this was back in the military, when I was in the military. When we did the Mediterranean tour, there was alcohol there that American military were not allowed to have because it was a narcotic or something. It was in the booze. It was like poppy things from whatever.
That could be absinthe. Absinthe was supposed to have hallucinogenic effects back in the old days.
Mm-hmm.
They make stuff today called absinthe, but not like that anymore.
Not that yummy.
And it could be the way it was produced made a chemical that was hallucinogenic. I'm not sure, or if they added something to give it that little kick. I don't know.
Well, I used to be better versed in this, but there's some plant that grows in the Middle East, and it has poppies, and it's not cocaine. I don't know what it is.
No, it's heroin. That's what they make heroin with.
Oh, okay. Well, they take that, and they somehow crush that up and make it an alcohol, and, you know, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Mm. I was talking to Dave, and I had to go through some old mail from 2015. And I ran across this one document that said I took a sleeping test with the VA. And I was like, okay, I don't remember it, but sure, okay, why not? And it said that at night I quit breathing.
Oh.
And that this could cause brain damage.
So you didn't pass the test?
Yeah, I didn't.
No,
yeah,
you
I
did.
Didn't
you flunked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what that means is that now I'm stuck with this quandary, this conundrum of, okay, is it bad to have brain damage and you know about it, or bad to have brain damage and not know about it? I don't know. But I started having problems with my vocabulary.
I never liked conundrums. I could never find one that fits, number one. And
I think they're great with pawpaw juice.
I find you have to find the other one in order to make bookends out of them, but, you know, that's me.
There you go. Yeah.
But, so that's a weird thing that might be there. And this memory stuff that I've been having with not the toys, well, sort of, yes, but that's not, like, serious stuff. But, you know, if you go paying a company $1,200 and then X number of months later you're like, huh, what? That's not good. Really?
Well, I like your overall attitude about it, though. It's like every day's a new day.
Every day's a new day. Every package. I was telling Dave, I
every
got some toys
surprise.
Today. If I
yeah,
box them up with Christmas paper, when Christmas happens, it's going to be like Santa Claus because I'll have no recollection. It's going to be like magic.
Right. And then you'll say, who left these for me?
Well, Let me ask you this.
On the label.
Because I do a lot of associative things in my head to, you know, to hopefully have a halfway decent memory. When you stumble upon something that you've forgotten for a long time, does it come back to you how it got there?
No.
No. All right, just curious.
I got nothing.
Then you have
it really
gremlins.
Is a new day.
It's not you. You have gremlins.
Hmm?
Yeah,
I had gremlins.
You do. You just can't see them.
Well,
they're not going to show themselves to you.
If you find them, you can make them pay rent.
Yeah.
But, no.
Wouldn't get into
a
plane with one. Didn't work out for Bugs Bunny.
No, it didn't. Didn't work out for that Christmas movie either.
Yeah, a lot of screaming.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Okay, I remember somebody glued a gremlin onto a ceiling fan. Hilarious. Remember?
Like from the movie Gremlins?
Yeah, yeah. It was like
one
of them was on a ceiling fan going
That's
around.
A great, yeah, because one of them got it that way, right?
Got what?
It got, squooshed
mutated?
Or, like, splattered, yeah, mutilated.
Yeah, no. First it was a cuddly thing, and then it turned into the crazy thing, and then...
Right, when they got wet.
Yeah, when they got wet. After
or
midnight.
8 after midnight or whatever.
Yeah, or something like that. And then one of them ended up on a ceiling fan going around, and it was just really funny.
Yeah.
Sight gag.
One ended up in a microwave, too.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, that. Mm.
Yeah.
It's just really curious that in the morning, I make sure I do the – now, here's the thing I know I do, but I can't remember it the next day, is I know before I go to bed, do all the dishes. Okay, so they're in the rack and they're drying. Then I go in the kitchen the next morning. It's like, was there a maid who cleaned up the kitchen? It was me. I know it was me. I'm the only one here. So, yeah, but I have no recall of doing it.
I have the same experience, except that when I go, oh, wow, I must have gremlins. And then the wife says, hey, it was me. Why don't you ever push them away? No, I'm kidding.
Wow.
Joking. Dave, you met Denise. You can't picture her doing that.
No.
No. Not even being stuck with someone like me.
Well, yeah, you know. You should get her an award. You know, go to one of these little shops they have around town that make little statuesque awards. And greatest wife of 2021. I just give it to her and go, there you go, baby. Can't hurt.
That wouldn't hurt.
Hey, man.
It can when she throws it at you.
Yep.
Well, yeah, the pointy end. Yeah, that'll hurt. But, yeah. So that really is, I am seriously having some connective mental stuff going on. But like you said, my approach is, okay, well, you know, be happy about it until you can't, I guess.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, no, you have a very positive outlook, and that's refreshing. That's one of the reasons I like hanging around you, man.
Well, thank you. And me too, without a rope.
I'm glad you like hanging around you too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm kind of stuck now. It's just me.
Yeah.
Me and toys and stuff.
Toys are good. They're good for the soul.
Oh, you got the message on Christmas Day and New Year's. I am not broadcasting on Horrible Horror. I'll be available the day before for the Friday things with you guys,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not
mm-hmm.
going to be available for Saturdays. I'm just
okay. Yeah, you're going to be hard at work.
I got 2 weeks off, and I got a bunch of stuff to do.
Bunches and bunches and bunches.
So fruitcake is a no. Dale doesn't know, but Dave said heck no, right?
Heck no, yeah, because I've actually tasted Dale hasn't.
It just doesn't look right, dude. It just doesn't look right. There are things floating. No. My life has been, I don't want the food or the drink with floaters.
Oh,
I even had problems with Fresca. Fresca had floaters. Do you remember that?
Fresca had floaters? What, did they put, like, pulp in it or something, or what?
No, they were supposed to be, I don't know, flavor crystals or some crap, or
it's
snowing in the bottle, but it had floaters.
Ew.
Intentional floaters. Yeah, I know.
No.
Wasn't it Fresca, Dave, that had that?
May have been. I don't know that it was intentional or not, because it wasn't in all of them, I don't think.
Well, I think later they got rid of it because people were, like, grossed out, and it was too late. There is no Fresca anymore.
Over 20 years ago, I was a fan of Yoo-Hoo chocolate drink, right?
Dude.
Oh, yeah.
Yoo-Hoo.
And it was like, oh, this is amazing. It's wonderful. And then one day I got one, and it was chunky. And I was like, okay, never again. That's it. I'm done.
That'll do it.
That was it. Nope. Mm-mm.
That one bad
I don't know what that's about,
it.
But, you know, I don't know. That was ground-up gerbil. I have no idea what that was.
Oh,
but nope. I'm done. Yeah. Yeah.
I hope you got some bones at least.
Yeah,
if there's a bone in your milk, not good.
Yeah. The heck are they milking a cow with to get bone in the milk?
I know, right? What has that cow been eating?
The heck?
It's not a grass-fed cow.
That's a zombie cow there.
That's right.
I don't know.
Zombie cow.
I think that was somebody milking a moose.
Yeah.
Mmm. I recently saw a documentary about mooses in Russia.
I'm glad we didn't bring up, like, The Walking Dead, because there's this, like, whole battle of, are they zombies or are they not zombies? They call them... Well, the show The Walking Dead, they never refer to them as zombies, but the fans do.
Well, yeah. Right.
But, you know, there's this whole argument. I've heard people going back and forth sometimes, or viewed anyway, on social media that voodoo has to be involved for it to be a zombie. These are animated dead and whatever.
Right.
Like you know, from Walking, I'm sorry, Night of the Living Dead. They're not technically zombies. They were artificially zombinated.
Wait.
Rather than through the voodoo process.
Was it they died from a virus and the virus allowed them to come back from the dead? I don't know. What's the backstory on...
That is what it is. It's treated as an illness.
Oh.
And it kills. You know, when you get bit by one of them, you get the illness, you die, and then you get reanimated. And when you shortly after you croak.
Huh. Vincent Price had a show called The Last Man on Earth. And
yeah, that was a good
movie. I don't know if they were zombies or the Living Dead or if they were vampires or what. But it was virus spread in the air.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Did you know Omega Man is a remake of that?
Yes.
Yep.
See, I got introduced to Omega Man, and then I saw the Will Smith, and then within the past decade or so, Vincent Price.
Will
Smith
is the one that they finally used the title of the short story that it was taken from, I Am Legend.
Yes.
Yeah.
Richard Matheson's story, I believe.
Yes.
I saw the Omega Man on the CBS late movie or whatever that was called. I think there was only like two lates in it, but and scared the heck out of me. I was like, good grief. That was a spooky film. And I was young and it was dark. I don't know, it was night. I should have been in bed asleep, and instead I'm like bleary eyed going, oh my gosh, zombie monsters or whatever. Charlton Heston, and it didn't have a good ending. That was one where the good guys did not win.
No, no.
You know, they took them out.
Have you ever seen The Mist? Boy, you talk about a tragic ending. Oh.
The Mist, M-I-S-T?
Yeah, it's a movie adaptation of a Stephen King, I think, short story or novelette. These people get trapped in this small town in a supermarket, and there's this heavy mist, and in the mist is all like these horrible bug-like creatures trying to get them. And it's probably one of the most tragic endings you'll ever see.
There was an Adrian Barbeau film called The Fog. Remember that one?
I never seen it all the way through. I've seen bits
and
parts
of it. I think it was one of those John Carpenter films, Jeff.
It was, yeah,
yeah.
'Cause she was with him, and they were making films together.
Oh, well, that was a spooky one too. And the guy who was the father was I can't think of his name. He did Mark Twain.
Hal Holbrook.
Yes, Hal Holbrook was in that. Yes, as a priest. And I was like, okay, but. Yeah, the fog came in, and inside the fog was all of these dead people that died at sea, and they were coming to, I don't even know why they were there, but, yeah.
And that's funny, because Adrian Barbeau and Hal Holbrook were also in that segment of the first Creepshow movie called The Crate.
Oh. That's one
and,
I don't know.
She plays, like, a really aggressive wife, and he's kind of cowed. He works at a university and finds this crate with this horrible creature in it. I think it was a creep show, wasn't it, Dave?
Huh.
I don't know whether that was
first
creep
show movie, I believe.
And what's her name? Who was the girl? The girl in I think it was Halloween. Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah.
Jamie, yeah, I think she was in The Mist too. I could be wrong, but I thought she might have been in there too.
Yeah, it was the first Creepshow movie in '82.
Oh, okay.
I remember the segment with E.G. Marshall and
with the bugs.
Yeah.
And then there's the one I love it because I always pull out and post a segment from it on Father's Day. I want my Father's Day cake.
What is that for?
Guy comes back from the dead. And there was a fourth story. And then there was the wraparound story with the kid, right?
Yeah.
This is all Creepshow?
Yeah, the first Creepshow movie.
Creepshow the movie, yeah.
Oh that's the one with Leslie Nielsen is in one of them.
Yeah, I thought he was in the second movie. Was he in the first?
No, he was in the first one.
Okay.
And then Creepshow 2 was good, too. My favorite one from that is the hitchhiker. Thanks for the ride, lady. This woman's cheating on her husband and in a hurry to get home and takes out this hitchhiker. And then she keeps seeing him in further and greater forms of decay coming after him.
Ew.
Or coming after her while she's trying to get home.
She totally destroys her car trying to get through the woods to get away from it. She ends up smashing it into a tree with the car like a million times, and it's like a huge Audi or BMW. It's built like a tank, you know.
Mhm.
And then it's good. That's a good one.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with it. I enjoyed horror movies when I was young, but I didn't. Again, once you cross that threshold where it's like blood and gore and guts, and I backed off, and I'm like, I'll stick to the older.
These
stuff.
Weren't too bad. These were 80s where they didn't go too overboard with the gore.
Right.
Yeah.
Creepshow, that, although that one was rather gory, but almost comically so, you know what I mean? And, you know, almost in a Monty Python way. It wasn't intended to be comical, but, you know, they didn't do CGI back then, so there were a lot of practical effects, and they didn't have a massive budget, but they got their story told, and they got their stories across. So,
there's a I think it's Italian, called it's a movie series. There are like four of them, maybe,
mm-hmm.
and it starts with The Night of the Blind Dead.
No, I'm not familiar with those.
Oh my gosh, I seek it out. It's not gory that much, but here's the premise. The premise is that these people that are in like a cult are put to death, and they come back, but for whatever reason, when they're put to death, I think their eyes are burned.
Cool.
So when they come back, they're blind. So the only way they can get to you is if you make noise. So there's some scenes where everybody's like, shh, be quiet. And they can't see them, so they can't get to them. But they're right there. So you got zombie people, skeleton-type people in hoods, you know, and they're like, they're listening. Where are they? Where are they? You know, and but they can't see them. So as long as you stay absolutely still, you know, they can't find you. It's funny.
Yep. Well, fellas, I think the hooting is about to begin shortly.
Oh, uh-oh. Wow, there you go.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's only one way to shut
my
off
little
a
buddy.
There's only one way to shut off a hooter, man.
Jimmy Durante? I guess
that's one way.
How did you know?
This dog is crazy. He makes a million strange sounds. Especially when he first wakes up, it's groans and moans. And
yeah, like I said, I was when you first like mentioned that, I was concerned that there's actually a medical problem with the poor guy.
No, he's just very vocal.
He's just a groaner.
Well, he's a slug. It takes him forever to wake up. Oh my God! You think a dog when they wake up? Oh, gotta go potty. No, he's like,
all the dogs I ever had. You know, it's like, you know, rarely do you get the dog that acts like kids on Christmas morning, where it's like 6 o'clock in the morning. Come on, let's go. And they're like,
no, this one's a slug. He's so funny. But once he gets going, you can get him running and playing and stuff, but he just takes forever to get rolling. Man. Collies are chill. Yeah, chill dog.
Before we go, are you guys getting snow and stuff up there where you are?
Not yet. Not today.
No,
it was
no.
Nice. It was 50s today.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was the T-shirt and shorts weather. It is ridiculous.
We had dribs and drabs of snow, but it didn't stick.
Ah, You guys all geared up for Christmas? Or is it cold there a little bit? I mean, you just said 50s, but is it bouncing around? Or?
Oh yeah,
it's bouncing around.
The,
we had days in 20s
is,
and 30s.
Yeah, there's some days it's pretty stinking cold, but not much snow. Not much precipitation area.
Well,
gentlemen, all right.
I
well,
think
you guys
I'm
going to
drag
care.
Jimmy out here.
Get Greg, yeah. Give me out. Oh, now see, yep. I caught your yawn. Thank you so much.
Yep. Well, good night, guys. Blah, blah.
Blah,
blah,
bye-bye.
Come on, Jimmy.
Have a good program.
Night. Night. It's time to say good night. Night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Aribo, up we the same, and ink-a-tink-a-doo.
Good night. Good night. good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Feel better.